This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 7:16. You're listening to the Evening Edition with Sharmila. We're now going to move on to a story that has been getting a lot of attention over the weekend when the health DG announced that 40 healthcare workers were infected with COVID-19 despite having received their vaccinations. So we're going to be looking at the context behind this and also clarify how vaccines are supposed to work in the first place. So to no surprise, really, the news that these healthcare workers had been infected after having received their second dose of the vaccine has gotten a lot of people questioning the efficacy of the vaccinations in the first place. And with so many challenges in getting people to sign up for them, this has gotten people asking yet again whether they should reconsider signing up for the vaccines. Now, Minister Khairi Jamaluddin did come out to say that people shouldn't circulate this news without the proper context. He clarified that you are only considered to be fully vaccinated 2 weeks after receiving your second dose because it'll take that long for your immune system to be prepared to fight the virus. But even then, it is worth keeping in mind that getting vaccinated doesn't 100% leave you unable to get COVID-19. What it does is that you're less likely to suffer from severe symptoms such as breathing difficulties or, in unfortunate cases, death. So we'll be looking at what happened with this particular case and also to try and better understand what these vaccines are supposed to do in the first place. So to help us understand this, we're crossing over now to Professor Dr. Sanjay Rampal, epidemiologist at University of Malaya. Prof, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Sharmila. It's always a pleasure.
So this news has been getting a lot of attention. Now, could you explain how this could have happened? How did these healthcare workers get infected despite having been vaccinated?
Yep. Okay, Sharmila. So first of all, I would like to commend the DG of Health for being transparent with the incidence of COVID-19 among healthcare workers. I think trust and goodwill are key for higher vaccine uptake by the community. Now, looking at the report of 40, only 9 of these 40 reported cases were infected after the recommended onset of protective period, which is the 2 weeks that you referred to. And if you think about it, this may be perceived positively in that only 9 of the many healthcare workers who have been vaccinated in phase 1 have become infected, that too with milder symptoms. Now, it takes time for the vaccine to work, and the initial vaccine research had determined that 2 weeks that we are using as sufficient lag period for the protective onset of the vaccines. Now, you bring up some important points, and actually I've read in the media also some important points, like we should be clear that following vaccination, the risk of infection and its complications decreases, but the risk will not reduce to zero, at least for the next few years, right? This is because the continued high global incidence makes new mutations more likely, and these mutations may reduce a vaccine's future effectiveness. Thus, the risk of infection to the virus will persist for the coming years. However, vaccines should help us in the short term of this pandemic by decreasing the immediate risk of infection and by decreasing the disease severity when infected. Now, we should also plan for the long term by improving our public health capacity and the economy. So to summarize, even though that you become vaccinated, your risk of infection does not become zero. It becomes lower than it is. So if you look at the efficacy of vaccine, so when someone says there's a 90% efficacy, so it's actually a 90% efficacy, a 90% reduction of risk compared with the absolute risk of getting infected. And it will never go to zero unless we don't have any more COVID around in our population.
Now, based on the current data that we have, how much protection does a person get from having received their first dose of the vaccine versus having gotten both their doses?
So that's the thing about this, right? So if you start to dissect the periods, it becomes difficult because most vaccine trials have used the 2 weeks post dose two as a marker for vaccine efficacy. So I think it becomes dangerous to talk about protectiveness after the first dose. We should assume that anyone who has just had one dose is not protected. That way, we will increase compliance, and we will also increase the understanding that you need, if a vaccine denotes two doses, you need to take those two doses, and you need that lag period after the second dose in order to get some protection from the vaccine.
And the DG, of course, has said, and you touched on this earlier as well, that it takes 2 weeks for that immunity response to kick in after you get your second dose. Could you explain further what this means?
So basically, when we get a vaccine, right, the body starts up some antibody production. And so that's why there is a need for two doses, because this is a novel virus, right? So there's two doses that's needed in a short duration of time. And only after a certain period of time do the late antibodies, the IgGs, right, are produced in sufficient amounts to have a protective effect for us. Now, one important point is, even in the long term, if our antibodies go down, there's always a certain proportion of antibodies that get converted to memory cells, and they can always be reactivated if the body is attacked in the future. So even though that we may have, and there's also cross-strain protection, possibility of cross-strain protection. So even though that with the introduction of mutations in the future, there will be a certain amount of safety of protection from the vaccination that we are undergoing right now.
And of course, Minister Khairi Jamaluddin has also said that even if you are infected after you get vaccinated, you're much less likely to suffer from severe symptoms. Could you explain this?
So the idea here is that when we get vaccination, right, our bodies produce antibodies. However, that there is this area in the nasopharynx, our upper respiratory tract, which when the virus comes in, the virus may actually replicate in this area, giving us an infection, stimulating the body to produce that antibodies that the body has initially had when we got the vaccine. This may take some time. That is why that it is possible to get infected even after vaccination. However, it's mild because the antibody production in the body is accelerated, and the body very fast can combat these vaccines. Now, one important point is every individual has a different risk of severity. It's just innate. Right? So vaccination reduces this risk of infection. So some people who are more immunoprotective, who are much more healthier, their risk will be actually reduced much more than others who may be immunocompromised.
Now, those constant reminders that we should continue to follow the SOPs even after we've been vaccinated, why is this important?
So I think it's important because SOPs are important, but at the same time, I think it's timely that we recalibrate our SOPs for a longer, more sustainable approach to this pandemic. I think it's important to follow our SOPs, but at the same time, our SOPs should evolve with our knowledge. Pandora has been let out of the box. We just have to plan to live with the virus for the long term, and our approaches should be long-term approaches. And in the long term, we can hope that the virus mutates to a more sustainable form akin to the flu virus. But at the same time, I think we should increase our preventive public health care capacity and our economy so that we're more resilient to this pandemic.
So that's an interesting point that you bring up, right? Because as people start getting vaccinated, they will want to be able to do more than they have been in the last year. And I'm wondering whether that's wise, in the sense that I've been vaccinated, I want to travel, I've been vaccinated, I want to hang out with my friends. Are these things that are okay to do? How careful do we need to be?
I think the better question is, how much risk do you want to assume? Mm. Right? So without vaccination, you were at a higher risk. Post-vaccination, you actually had a very much lower risk. But the risk is there. Right? So the risk of travel, let's say if you wanted to travel and you observe SOPs, there is some risk to it, but because you're observing SOPs, the risk is minimized. Right? Now, number one, you're vaccinated, so your risk has been lowered. Number two, you're adhering to SOPs, your risk is even further decreased. Now, let's assume you just get vaccinated and you move around. If you're moving around in open spaces, that's okay. But if you're moving around in closed, congested areas, especially when community transmission is high, you may actually get infected. So that is a risk. Each of us has a risk. I think we all have to decide whether we would like to decrease our risk even further, or we accept a risk. That is whatever predetermined. Now, one important thing when I talk about each of us having a risk is, for example, take physical distancing, for example, right? Physical distancing works on paper. Physical distancing does not work in closely, very highly dense urban areas. So when physical distancing doesn't work in highly dense urban areas, we should actually change our SOPs. Then in these areas, because they're closed, they're congested, physical distancing may not be the key pillar of protection, rather the use of face masks. Right? Whereas in other places where they're much more open, less congestion, then you could enforce physical distancing without the use of face mask.
Mm. In closing, I wanted to bring up the question of public health communication, right? Especially as we move forward, there appears to be constant misunderstandings when it comes to information about the vaccines, what they can or cannot do. What do you think can be improved in terms of how this information is communicated to the public?
I think you bring up a very important point, and I fully agree that we need to improve our public health communication. So public health communication should be transparent with the harm and benefits of the vaccine to maintain the trust of the public. Now, there is polarization of opinion secondary to social media algorithms and poor vaccine literacy. Now, what I think is good is that we all should have an open mind when reading so-called facts from any media, and verify the ones that seem important to you, and you can cross-verify by searching many other sites. It's also important to get an appraisal of new scientific evidence. Not all new scientific evidence is gold, right? So all the studies that come out actually have caveats and assumptions that need to be finally understood before interpreting the conclusions. So one key problem about social media messaging is half-truths, right? You want to watch out for that. Now, When you talk about vaccine hesitancy, there's also another group, the wait-and-see group. I opine that these are akin to late adopters of innovation, and they're likely to register in a couple of months. So early on, you were saying that many people were not registering, right? Mm-hmm. I think many of these are just hesitant. They're just waiting and seeing what's going to happen. Now, for our public health communication, I think trust and goodwill are key. Maintaining trust and goodwill are key for higher vaccine uptake by the community. Now, I think all governments need to be transparent about the harms along with the benefit of the vaccine. So we need to maintain the trust of the community. We cannot say the vaccine is all good, right? What we can derive is the vaccine does more good than harm. So I think this transparency is likely to increase trust in the translation of the science and how it may benefit the community. And this goes back again to the DG. I think what he did was very good as in being transparent that this is occurring. Now it's up to us to interpret how, why and what.
Prof, thanks so much for speaking with us today.
Thank you, Shamina. It's been a pleasure.
That was Professor Dr. Sanjay Rampal, epidemiologist at University of Malaya, helping us understand the case over the weekend where 40 healthcare workers were reported to have contracted COVID-19 despite having been vaccinated. So let us know your thoughts. You can, as always, WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. This has been The Evening Edition.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.